Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is the sixth canto, chapter 12. This is the glorious death of the demon Vritrasura. So the last verse that was given was 22, and it starts here on 23. But the verse that's on the board, I think, is 26 or let's see. Yes. Dorbyam. Yeah. Okay. Dorbyam. Utkrita. Mulabyam. Babo. Rakta. Shravo. Sura. Sura. China. Paksho, yata, gotraha, kad, brashto, vajrina, hattaha, dorbyam, utkrita, mulabyam, babo, rakta, sravo, suraha, China pakso yata gotraha. Kad brasto vajrina hataha. Dorbyam utkrita mulabyam. Babo rakta shravo suraha. China pakso yata gotra. Kad brasto vajrina yataha. Mataji's. Dorbyam from the two arms. Utkrita mulabhyam, cut from the very root. Baba was. Raktasravaha, profusely discharging blood. Asuraha, Ritrasura. Chinapaksaha, whose wings are cut. Yata, just as. Gotraha, a mountain cut from the sky. Vastraha, falling. Vajrina, by Indra, the carrier of the thunderbolt. Hataha, struck. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Vritasura, bleeding profusely, his two arms cut off at their roots, looked very beautiful, like a flying mountain whose wings have been cut to pieces by Indra. Please repeat. Vritasura, bleeding profusely, his two arms cut off at their roots, looked very beautiful, like a flying mountain whose wings have been cut to pieces by Indra. Purport. It appears from the statement of this verse that sometimes there are flying mountains and that their wings are cut by the thunderbolt of Indra. Vritrasura's huge body resembled such a mountain. Om Gyananta Midandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshus Unmanitam Yena Tasmaya Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upakadamayam Dadanti Swabhadantikam Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Guru Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Vancha kopa tribhyas cha kripa sindhu beva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. So, gee, you took the words right out of my mouth. Thank you. Yes, so we're going to start from 23 and we'll continue here. I just wanted to finish the prayers because it was that particular verse. But we'll just finish. Actually, we'll just finish the chapter because there's just that short purport and it goes all the way to the end of the chapter with no purports except the last verse. So we'll just finish the chapter. So this is starting with Sukadeva Goswami speaking. Vritrasura and King Indra spoke about devotional service even in the battlefield. And then as a matter of duty, they again began fighting. My dear king, both of them were great fighters and were equally powerful. O Maharaj Parikshit, Vritrasura, who was completely able to subdue his enemy, took his iron club, whirled it around, aimed it at Indra, and then threw it at him with his left hand. With his thunderbolt named Saptaparvan, Indra simultaneously cut to pieces Vritrasura's club and his remaining hand. Vritrasura, bleeding profusely, his two arms cut off at their roots, looked very beautiful, like a flying mountain whose wings have been cut to pieces by Indra. Vritrasura was very powerful in physical strength and influence. He placed his lower jaw on the ground and his upper jaw in the sky. His mouth became very deep, like the sky itself, and his tongue resembled a large serpent. With his fearful, death-like teeth, he seemed to be trying to devour the entire universe. Thus assuming a gigantic body, the great demon Vritrasura shook even the mountains and began crushing the surface of the earth with his legs, as if he were the Himalayas walking about. He came before Indra and swallowed him, and Aravata, his carrier, just as a big python might swallow an elephant. When the demigods, along with Brahma, other Prajapatis, and other great saintly persons, saw that Indra had been swallowed by the demon, they became very morose. "Alas," they lamented, "what a calamity, what a calamity." The protective armor of Narayan, which Indra possessed, was identical with Narayan himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Protected by that armor and by his own mystic power, King Indra, although swallowed by Vritrasura, did not die within the demon's belly. With his thunderbolt, King Indra, who is also extremely powerful, pierced through Vritrasura's abdomen and came out. Indra, the killer of the demon Bala, then immediately cut off Vritrasura's head, which was as high as the peak of a mountain. Although the thunderbolt revolved around Vritrasura's neck with great speed, separating his head from his body took one complete year, 360 days, the time in which the sun, moon, and other luminaries complete a northern and southern journey. Then, at the suitable time for Vritrasura to be killed, his head fell to the ground. When Vritrasura was killed, the Gandharvas and Siddhas in the heavenly planets beat kettle drums in jubilation. With Vedic hymns, they celebrated the prowess of Indra, the killer of Vritrasura, praising Indra and showering flowers upon him with great pleasure. So this is the last verse of the chapter. O King Parikshit, subduer of enemies, the living spark then came forth from Vritrasura's body and returned home back to Godhead. While all the demigods looked on, he entered the transcendental world to become an associate of Lord Sankarshan. Purport. Srila Vishnava Chakravarti Thakur explains that Indra, not Vritrasura, was actually killed. He says that when Vritrasura swallowed King Indra and his carrier, the elephant, he thought, "Now I have killed Indra, and therefore there is no more need of fighting. Now let me return home, back to Godhead." Thus he stopped all his bodily activities and became situated in trance. Taking advantage of the silence of Vritrasura's body, Indra pierced the demon's abdomen, and because of Vritrasura's trance, Indra was able to come out. Now, Vritrasura was in yoga samadhi, and therefore, although King Indra wanted to cut his throat, the demon's neck was so stiff that Indra's thunderbolt took 360 days to cut it to pieces. Actually, it was the body left by Vritrasura that was cut to pieces by Indra. Vritrasura himself was not killed. In his original consciousness, Vritrasura returned home, back to Godhead, to become an associate of Lord Sankarshan. Here the word alokam means the transcendental world, Vaikuntha Loka, where Sankarshan eternally resides. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 6th canto, 12th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Vritrasura's Glorious Death. I guess now would have been a good time to say Om again. But anyway, this is a very amazing chapter. We have just finished this glorious activities of a demon, Vritrasura. And as mentioned in this particular purport of the last verse, it's given us the clue how the Atma, the spiritual spark within each of us, it doesn't undergo birth, death, or changes like the body. Therefore, there's a Vedic aphorism that says, asangohi ayam purusha, that although the soul is conditioned within this material world, It has no connections with the changes of the material body. But this bodily conception of life, one is considered to be in darkness. But in self-realization, he thinks, without self-realization, he's thinking that I am killed. You know, I've killed my enemies. So the foolish person is thinking that himself, the killer, or that he's being killed. And we see Virchasura didn't have this mentality. But King Indra seemed to have it. I'm killing my enemy. But Virchasura was glad. He's like, you know, I'm not going to be killed. Actually, it's not my body. I'm getting ready to go back to Godhead. So, but what happened to Indra is because he had this mentality, he has to continue to be responsible for material obligations. And consequently, he's going to suffer the reactions of happiness and distress. And we'll see in the next chapter where he actually is going to suffer the reactions for this sin. So this body, it's subject to its own principles of birth, death, old age, and disease. But one who's situated in spiritual life, Yato Bhaktir Hoksaje, he has no birth. He has no death, no old age, and no disease. So one may argue that, you know, a person who's engaged 24 hours a day, he's still suffering, you know, from disease. In fact, however, it's described that he's not suffering from disease. Otherwise, he couldn't be engaged 24 hours a day in spiritual activity. And Prabhupada uses an example of the Mother Ganges, how sometimes there's dirty foam and garbage. It can be seen floating down the river. But this is just a function of the water. But one who goes to the Ganges, a devotee, he doesn't mind the foam or the garbage. He just, you know, pushes it away with his hand, and then he takes his bath and he gets his beneficial results. So therefore, one who's situated in spiritual life, he's unaffected by foam and garbage or any superficial dirty things. There's a verse that confirms this that says, a person acting in the service of Krishna with his body, mind, and words is a liberated person, even within the material world. So, as we see from this pastime, we're learning from this one important principle, actually, that it's forbidden to regard the guru as an ordinary human being. And this is the big mistake Indra underwent. He offended his guru by not offering respect when he entered the assembly. He didn't even get up. He was puffed up with his position, thinking, oh, it's just, you know, he comes every day. You know, this is ordinary activity. So he didn't even bother. But from that one offense, he lost everything. And then again, he had to regain it. So he was given another spiritual master who he also killed this time. You see, and then he suffered reactions for that. And now again, he's going to kill Virchasura, who's actually acting as his spiritual master. We'll see here. He's actually instructing him on the principles of devotional service. In fact, they're actually, in this particular chapter we just read, how they were discussing devotional service in the battlefield. You know, stop for a while, and then they start fighting again. So Chanaka Pandit says that even from poison extract nectar, wash and take back gold if it has fallen in filth. Receive highest knowledge, Krishna consciousness, from a low-born person. So also a girl possessing virtuous qualities, even if she be born in a disreputable family. So this is a great principle we could see from here, how even from a demon, we can get transcendental knowledge. And this is throughout the Bhagavatam. Even from a low-born, like it says, a girl, even though she may be born in a disreputable family, even we could see Chintamani, who was considered a prostitute. She gave transcendental knowledge to Bilvamangala Thakur. And Prabhupada mentions in this chapter Bali Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj, who Indra was reminded of listening to Vritrasura's transcendental words. They're also demons. And it's described that Ravana also was very learned in the Vedas. Very interesting. And Kamsa, he also spoke transcendental knowledge. He was a big demon. Very big demon. And we know that in the pastime when he was killing all the children of Vasudeva and Devaki, and then when finally the eighth child came, we thought was Krishna, he went to grab it and smash it on the ground, and out of his hands appeared the personification of Durga appeared before him and told him, "You fool, what's the use of trying to kill me? Krishna, who you are so afraid of, has already taken birth somewhere else, and he will surely kill you." You know, so he was like shocked that, you know, that Durga could be born from my sister. You know, she must be an exalted soul. I mean, I'm so sinful. I'm exactly like a man-eater, a rakshasa, who eats his own child. I've killed so many sons of my sister. And that's what rakshasas are. They're accustomed to eating their own sons, and just like snakes and other animals. And Prabhupada says that in this present time, and we know in Kali Yuga, there's rakshasa fathers and mothers. They're actually killing their own children in the womb. And some are even eating the fetus with great relish. And this is what's happening to this so-called civilization. It's gradually advancing and producing rakshasas. So Kamsa, he was saying that he's praying and begging forgiveness, you know, to these great souls, and explaining to them Atma Tattva. He actually had transcendental knowledge. And he understood that the suffering of these children was actually due to their own misfortune. And he appealed to them, to Vasudeva Devaki, "Please don't lament for them. All living entities are under the control of the Supreme. And we cannot live together. Not always." And he was explaining transcendental knowledge. He was saying how, you know, in this world we see pots, dolls, and other products. They're of the earth, and then they appear to break and disappear, and then again they mix with the earth. So similarly, the bodies of the conditioned living entities are all annihilated, but the living entity, like the earth itself, it's unchanging and never annihilated. This is what we're learning in this particular chapter, also how Vritrasura's body wasn't his body. That was annihilated, but not the soul. So even though Kamsa was a demon, he had good knowledge of the affairs of Atma Tattva. You know, 5,000 years ago, kings like Kamsa, even though they're described as asuras, they were better than modern politicians and diplomats. Because these modern politicians, they don't even have Atma Tattva. They don't have knowledge of the truth of the soul and its connection with its changes of the material body. You know, we know that the body goes through these changes. It takes birth, you know, a growth, sustenance, byproducts, dwindling, and then it's annihilated. But the soul, it doesn't undergo such changes. You see? So there's one verse that he mentions here, Kamsa. "One who does not understand the constitutional position of the body and the soul, Atma, becomes too attached to bodily conception of life. Consequently, because of attachment to the body and its byproducts, he feels affected by union with and separation from his family, society, and nation. As long as this continues, one continues his material life. Otherwise, one is liberated." This is exactly what happened to King Indra. He was very much attached to this bodily conception of life. And he was affected by, you know, all his attachments to his bodily relationships and so many different things. So therefore, he had to continue in this material life again. But Ritrasura, he was transcendental. He was actually liberated. And his prayers, he was actually praying that I have no attachment for my wife, my family, or anything in this material world. Right in the battlefield, he was praying to Krishna, you know, when will I be able to just take shelter of your lotus feet? I am longing for you. You know, like a bird that's wings aren't developed yet. I'm just longing for that association when you're going to come and feed me. Or the calf when it's ready to be nursed. Or the wife, she's, you know, missing her partner, he's gone, and she's just in separation and can't wait till they meet. So in this way, he had this desire. He wanted that association of Krishna, and he wanted the association of the devotees. That's what we learned from him. One of the main teachings of Ritrasura is that he longed for the association of the devotees. He wanted to become the servant of the servant of the servants. But look at Kamsa, even though he was speaking transcendental knowledge, Atma Tattva, what did he do? The next day, he went and took advice from his counselors. And who were they? They were all demons. And they just gave him bad advice, counsel, because Kamsa didn't know what was in his best self-interest. They were glorifying him. Oh, Kamsa, you're such a great personality. Demons flee from you when you're in the battlefield. They're all afraid of you. You know, so many things. Even Vishnu is hiding in the hearts of living entities. He can't bother you. Lord Brahma is always in meditation. He's always doing austerities. You know, in so many ways, he's convincing him that, don't worry. But now what we should do is, since we heard that Krishna is born somewhere else, let's just kill all the children that were born within this time span in this whole area. Let's kill them all. And Kamsa agreed. So they went out and just trying to kill Krishna. So just see the difference between this demon, Kamsa, and Ritrasura. Kamsa had bad association. Ritrasura wanted and longed for good association. He couldn't wait for the time when he could get the shelter of the lotus feet of Narada Muni, get the dust. This is what's really important, is that we have to understand how in this bodily concept of life, we remain in darkness. But if we actually understand this transcendental knowledge in good association, then we'll actually become liberated. No matter what we are, if we're a demon, you know, it mentions all these different races, the Khasa races, the Hundas, Hindus, Bhutas, so many different things, demons, we can become purified and actually become liberated, go back to Godhead, just like Ritrasura did. So, Ritrasura's teachings, I was just going through them in this chapter. It's amazing how there's so much that he gave us. You know, he's considered to be a great-minded hero. You know, he was considered to be so powerful. He was a hero among heroes. And he was given transcendental knowledge all throughout the battlefield, even to his own warriors. They were running away from the battlefield. And he was giving them transcendental knowledge. He says nobody could be saved in this world from death. Nobody, even providence, hasn't provided a means to escape it. So as he's preaching to his own fellow demons, telling him, don't run from the battlefield. It's better to die here, glorious death, than to just run away like a coward. And then the demigods were attacking the demons when they were running away. They're taking advantage and they're killing them like that. And then Ritrasura, such a great personality, a hero, he was chastising the demigods. What are you doing? You see these demons, they've taken birth uselessly. They're like stool, you know, coming from the bodies of their parents. You know, that's not very heroic to kill people who's afraid of losing his life. What kind of warriors are you? You're so insignificant, you demigods. You see, and then again, when he was encouraging Indra, he became his spiritual master because Indra became discouraged, you know, when he knocked him out, practically hit him in the jaw and hit his elephant in the jaw, and he was practically defeated, and he was like afraid to even pick up his thunderbolt again. But Ritrasura, what did he do? He stopped fighting and he started preaching to him and said, don't, just pick up your thunderbolt. And he encouraged him, saying, you know, this is empowered by Vishnu. Actually, I'm destined to die here. But you should just, you know, fight. And you know, Krishna's in control of everything. And then Krishna makes the arrangement, you know, you're going to kill me. So just, you know, pick up your thing and fight. And I know I'm going to die and I'm going to go back to Godhead. But still, I'm going to try to kill you because it's my duty. So he's giving instructions of how the devotees, you know, we should always perform our duty. Don't be discouraged. You know, don't become despondent. Just perform your duty. And that way you will actually be satisfied because Krishna is in control of everything. You see. You know, so he's telling him, you know, I'm before you. You know, throw your thunderbolt at me. Didn't you know that it's empowered by the prowess of Lord Vishnu? It's got the austerities of Didichi in it. You know, and this is Lord Vishnu's order. Actually, Indra came and prayed to Krishna, and Krishna came and told him, this is how you kill Ritrasura. So he was benedicting Indra according to his desires because he was a devotee. You know, ultimately, he was acting like a demon in this particular case. But Krishna fulfilled his desire. He was telling him how to regain his opulence again and how to kill this great demon, which just by his words, he terrified the demigods. So, you know, he said, just, you know, and then Ritrasura was blessed by Krishna because he wanted to die. He wanted to get rid of this filthy demon body, and he ultimately wanted to go back to the spiritual world. So Krishna made that arrangement. He used Indra, you know, to kill him. And that way he is actually blessed more. See, by killing Ritrasura, Indra would not actually gain. He would remain in the material world and have to be responsible for all his enjoyments and sufferings. But Ritrasura, he would go to the spiritual world. So therefore, victory was actually for Ritrasura, not Indra. So, here's the nice prayer that Ritrasura said. O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, will I again be able to be a servant of your eternal servants who find shelter only at your lotus feet? O Lord, in my life, may I again become their servant so that my mind may always think of your transcendental attributes. My words always glorify these attributes and my body always engage in the loving service of your lordship. So this is the sum and substance of devotional service. You know, the devotee's devotional life, this is our sum and substance, that become a servant of the servant of the Lord, the Dasa Anudasa. And this is what Lord Chaitanya advised. In that one verse, Gopi Bhartu Parakamalayor Dasa Dasa Anudasa Naha, that we must accept a spiritual master in disciplic succession and who is a servant of the Lord and serve him with our body, mind, and words. So this is our activities. Everything should be done under the order of this devotee. And this is the great lesson that Indra learned, that you cannot disrespect the devotee, a liberated person who is a servant of the servant of the servant. He's engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. Look at this huge arrangement, the huge suffering, so much strife happened because Indra offended the devotee who he should have been a servant of. Instead of trying to be the master and the enjoyer of everything that he surveyed. So he was reminding us also how everything is under the control of Krishna. Everything is under Krishna's control. And that we should see that Krishna is the ultimate cause, but we shouldn't be disturbed by these obvious causes that we see, these external causes. We should not be concerned about them. But just go on with our duty, tolerating these external factors. You know, don't get so disturbed by the dirty foam or the trash in the Ganges. But just wash it away and just do your duty, and then you'll be liberated. You'll be protected in that way. So I'd like to end with a nice, let's go back here to this is what we learned from another demon, Kamsa, while he was in his right state of mind. And this is what Vasudeva was actually praising Kamsa. O great personality, Kamsa, only by the influence of ignorance does one accept the material body and bodily ego. What you have said about this philosophy is correct. Persons in the bodily concept of life, lacking self-realization, differentiate in terms of this is mine and this belongs to another. So this is the mentality of Indra and also Kamsa. He went back to that mentality. So Prabhupada writes very nicely in the purport. Everything is done automatically by the laws of nature, which work under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is no question of doing anything independently. For one who has put himself in the material atmosphere is fully under the control of nature's laws. Our main business, therefore, should be to get out of this conditioned life and again become situated in spiritual existence. Only due to ignorance does a person think, I am a demigod, I am a human being, I am a dog, I am a cat. Or when the ignorance is still further advanced, I am God. Unless one is fully self-realized, one's life of ignorance will continue. So Prabhupada continues in his purport how a person with the vision of differentiation are imbued with the material qualities, lamentation, jubilation, fear, envy, greed, illusion, and madness. They're influenced by the immediate cause, which they are busy counteracting, because they have no knowledge of the remote supreme cause, the personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada continues again. I'm just reading parts of the Prabhupada's brilliant purport in this particular verse. When an expert physician treats a patient, he tries to find the original cause of the disease and is not diverted by the symptoms of that original cause. Similarly, a devotee is never disturbed by reverses in life. A devotee understands that when he is in distress, this is due to his own past misdeeds, which are now occurring reactions. Although by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are only very slight. When a devotee under the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is to suffer because of faults in his past deeds, he passes through only a little misery by the grace of the Lord. Although the disease of a devotee is due to mistakes committed sometimes in the past, he agrees to suffer and tolerate such miseries, and he depends fully on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, he is never affected by material conditions of lamentation, jubilation, fear, and so on. A devotee never sees anything to be unconnected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So ultimately, Indra, he actually agreed to suffer and tolerate his miseries, and he actually became liberated himself. So here's the last point. Thus, having considered the instructions of his bad ministers, Kamsa, who was bound by the laws of Yamaraj and devoid of good intelligence, because he was a demon, he decided to persecute the saintly persons, the brahmanas, as the only way to achieve his good fortune. So Prabhupada ends the purport. It's very short. It's a purport here. Sri Lokanath Das Thakura sung, Apana karma bunjaye samana kahe lochana das. Instead of taking good instructions from the sages and the shastras, godless non-devotees act whimsically according to their own plans. Actually, however, no one has his own plans because everyone is bound by the laws of nature and must act according to his tendency in material conditional life. Therefore, one must change his own decision and follow the decision of Krishna and Krishna's devotees. Then one is rescued from punishment by Yamaraj. Kamsa was not uneducated. It appears from his talks with Vasudeva and Devaki that he knew all about the laws of nature, but because of his association with bad ministers, he could not make a clear decision about his welfare. Therefore, Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastre Kaya, Lava Mantra Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Haya. If one desires his real welfare, he must associate with devotees and saintly persons, and in this way, rectify the material condition of his life. Yeah, so, thank you very much. Is there any comments or questions? Yes. Yes.
Can you just repeat the question?
He was wondering if it said that Vritrasura went back to Godhead and to associate Lord Shankarshan. And it's described that Lord Shankarshan is considered Krishna, you know, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's different expansions of Krishna. You know, he expands himself in different forms. And, you know, according to one's particular desire, Krishna will create a particular form just to, you know, associate with you. So that was a particular form he wanted to associate with Krishna. Yeah. Yes. There was another comment? No? Okay, thank you for your kind attention and patience. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam.